You're listening to Panel Borders. I'm Duncan Knott, and this is Resonance FM's weekly show about the world of comic books. In this episode, Alex Fitch and I are talking to British artist Steve Yeo, a creator renowned for his clean, high-contrast style that's lent realism to such fantastic strips as The Invisibles and The New Adventures of Hitler. As this show is recorded in the popular bar of the Bristol International Comics Expo, you'll have to forgive the background noise.
I'm currently finishing up a series called Detonator X for 2000 AD, which is giant robots and giant lizard monsters in London, New York, Tokyo, Mars. And then I should be starting a new series of Red Seas for 2000 AD, written by Ian Edgington. Other than that, I'm drawing the occasional backup story in a comic called The 99, published by Teshkil Comics, which is published in Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, the Lebanon. The regular titles drawn by John McCrae, who I believe you're talking to later, but they are generous enough to farm out, as I said, the occasional six-page backup story, and I've been the lucky recipient of one or two of those.
How did that come about? I mean, I'm not aware of any Saudi Arabian comic scene until you just mentioned it.
Well, I believe Teshkil are affiliated to Marvel in some way. The chap that set the whole thing up was employed by Marvel as an editor. And he went back to Kuwait and came up with the concept for this whole project. The editors I've worked with are ex-Marvel employees now working for Teshkil on a freelance basis. I got in touch with them simply through finding their website and sending some samples in, and they were mad enough to give me something. How John found them, I don't know. I believe they might have gone to John directly, but he'll be able to elaborate on that for you.
And that there's a growing comic scene in India and places like that now. Is it something that your style is fairly easily transportable and, you know, they want you, or is there a case of blending it into local expectations?
Well, I haven't been asked to compromise. I mean, it's a loaded word, but I haven't been asked to adjust my style in any way. I think what Teshkil liked about what I do is that it is quite simple and straightforward and adaptable to a lot of different things. I don't have I don't consider myself to have a specifically superhero or science fiction or really fantasy style. I've kind of got not a generic style, but a style that was in wide use in the 50s and 60s and that could be adapted to any kind of genre.
I mean, you seem to have been quite lucky with the whole variety of subjects you've been able to draw, from pirates, giant robots, time travelling, freedom fighters and the Invisibles, doing the adaptation of that Danny Boyle film, you know, and even doing superheroes in Zenith. I mean, is there any particular genre that you enjoy the most, or you just take the challenge as it comes?
I feel very comfortable with historical and fantasy. Why that should be, I don't know. I do enjoy that kind of costume drawing. When I was younger, I used to, in my Airfix kit days, used to leaf through those model magazines, you know, that had fully painted reference paintings of, I don't know, British soldiers in North America in 1776 or whatever. So, you know, I feel quite comfortable in the costume drama field, I suppose. Most of the science fiction stuff I've ever done has effectively been costume drama, because I do tend to refer back to sort of 1950s, 1960s science fiction and use that as a starting point rather than try to come up with anything startlingly original of my own.
Well, I think it's funny, I saw an interview with Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen, and he was saying that in the 70s, obviously sci-fi looked like the 70s, but now people are designing interiors that look like 1970s sci-fi, so the future they predicted in the 70s is coming true because of those programs.
Yeah, that's very true. I hadn't thought about that, but he's absolutely right, isn't he?
You're one of the few artists who've done work for 2000 AD, gone to America and done work over there and then come back again. Did you find it important to go back to your roots, a certain amount of loyalty, or is it basically, for 2000 AD, you get a variety of genres that you probably don't get in America?
Yeah, I think you pretty much hit the nail on the head there. I don't seem to have fallen into a convenient cubbyhole that the Americans have been able to put me in. So I don't know why that is exactly. I guess we're going back to the fact that I have a style that can't really be pinned down to any one particular genre, but I haven't really found one specific area of the American comics industry where I've had any long-term use. Yeah, sounds a bit self-deprecating. Yeah, why not be self-deprecating? Yeah, I haven't had any long-term use to the Americans, so I end up jumping around to lots of different places, doing working for whoever will have me.
I mean, I was going to ask, was it that Grant basically brought you along when he started doing the Invisibles?
Grant asked me to draw part of the Invisibles when he was pitching the whole concept originally. I remember him talking about it when we did the Vertigo tour in maybe 1991 and 1992, and at that time I wasn't able to commit myself to anything, but the projects I had planned fell through, so I was able to go back to him, back to DC, and it just so happened I was able to get some stuff finished for them in the schedule that they wanted at that time.
We were talking to Fraser Irving yesterday, and he was saying that having drawn a couple of Shaun of the Dead strips, that actually helps him when he's talking to American creators because they've got a point of reference. You did that adaptation of A Life Less Ordinary, which personally I really enjoyed, but I guess it was kind of unfortunate for everyone all around that it was the Danny Boyle film that kind of wasn't as much of a hit as anyone expected.
I was a little disappointed at the lack of enthusiasm for it. Personally, I enjoyed it as a film, and I enjoyed working on the adaptation. Plus, we got to go and hang out in their offices down in London, which was kind of interesting. Not as different as I thought it would be. It looked pretty much like an office a comics company would have. It's just that the posters and the walls are different. You know, still the same kind of organised chaos inside. I've completely blanked on his name. The guy who was producer that's related to Michael Powell.
Andrew. Scottish?
No, he's the writer, isn't he? Danny Boyle's director, Andrew Thing is the writer. That guy. I mean, he was a nice chap. Danny Boyle, I never spoke to. He came into the office once as we were leaving and gave us that kind of who the hell are you kind of look. And the writer, Andrew Anonymous, never spoke to him, never saw him. I mean, sorry, Andrew, if you're listening. That sounds terrible.
Yeah, I mean, you know, considering that they used a lot of comic art in the advertising for 28 Days Later, you know, maybe that was just at the time, and he became a comics fan later on, I don't know.
Yeah, or perhaps we were just breaking new ground by doing a comics adaptation then, and they just felt more settled with it by the time they came to produce 28 Days Later.
I was thinking about sort of every so often comic styles move along and sort of pick up a new energy and a new direction. Sometimes picking from the past, sometimes completely different. But when you were doing things like Zenith for 2000 AD, it came a bit before the fully painted, busily thing. But in a way, it's that slightly more energetic black and white, or black and white sort of with separate colour over the top, that's lasted longer and perhaps almost shaped things a bit more than the bells and whistles of Busily and the Horned God. Is that something you've seen, or was it anything conscious at the time to say, no, let's do this a different way from some of the 2000 AD strips we're looking at the time?
I wish I could say that, but it's because I, you know, deep down inside I'd probably like to be a painter, but I've just never been very good at it. I'm much more comfortable doing a black and white drawing and colouring it in afterwards.
When you did Zenith, I mean, that was kind of Grant Morrison's British version of Crisis on Infinite Earths. So you got to draw hundreds of different superheroes. I mean, did you get a say in the invention of certain of them? Or did he give notes on, I want a guy with like this and I want a girl with those and yada, yada, yada?
Yeah. What would happen is, obviously, we had the whole pantheon of Fleetway characters to use, so we used those verbatim. The DC Thompson characters that Grant wanted to introduce, we had to change slightly, change the names, adjust the costumes so that we wouldn't produce anything libelous.
Robot Archie.
Yeah. Well, Robot Archie's a Fleetway character anyway, so he wasn't a problem. Grant wanted to introduce some superhero characters he designed when he was younger, so he would send me little sketches of those on the back of a letter. In the days when we used to write, blimey, who writes anything anymore? And there were a few little ideas that I threw in. I seem to remember that I suggested using Robot Archie. I suspect he had plans to use him anyway, but you know, I was quite keen on using Robot Archie, and that whole Acid Archie thing I came up with just as one of those kind of doodly ideas you come up with one day.
What about including Richard Branson?
No, that was all Grant's idea. Yeah, that was all Grant's idea. The only thing I contributed to that was that the pattern on his jumper with the balloon and the speedboat, which was making reference to his transatlantic crossing he made around that time, wasn't it? And the whole Virgin balloon project.
Did you get any pushback at the time from, you know, the Hearts going, Richard Branson, acid and robots?
No, not at all, not at all.
Are there any characters or genres left that you're itching to draw that you haven't as yet?
Can't think of any. I think I've covered most of the genres that I would like to. I've never drawn a full-on horror story, and I've never drawn a war story, apart from obviously science fiction wars. So yeah, I'd be quite keen on drawing one of those sometime. But I've never done a love story. Yeah, a love story would be quite good. I've covered a lot of the bases, but I mean, it's always nicer to go back to something you've done in the past and refine it, if you see what I mean, refine your approach to a specific genre.
If you'd like to know more about today's show and download the podcast, please visit www.panelborders.com, where you can find links to previous shows and our blog, which has details of the graphic short story competition being run by The Observer. The next episode of Panel Borders is about a pair of very different artists who are both famous for working with writer Garth Ennis and produce challenging work with a strong aspect of caricature. John McCrae is an Irish artist who drew the endearing tale of a hitman working in Batman's Gotham City for 5 years, as well as darkly humorous tales about the Troubles in Northern Ireland. Glenn Fabry is a fantasy artist who is equally at home in paint as he is using pen and ink, and he's most famous for creating the covers on 75 issues of the acclaimed comic Preacher, as well as many groundbreaking adventures of the time-travelling barbarian Slane, or Shlorne, if you prefer, in 2000 AD. And Alex's interviews with John and Glenn are at the same time next week.